Hello, this is Rick Casals from ExercisesForInjuries.com. I have another interview for you today. It's a really interesting story. I had done an article review, as I often do, on ExercisesForInjuries.com, and the researcher of that article came across my blog article, and contacted me and asked if we could get on the phone and talk about the article a little bit more, and she can provide a little bit of insight into the kind of the back end of the article and share a little bit more about the article, and we'll kind of go from that. So I'll get you to introduce yourself, and we'll kind of get into the meat of the interview.
Great. Well, my name is Casey Kerrigan. Actually, my first initial D, Casey Kerrigan. So if you Google me, you'll see D, Casey Kerrigan. And I'm an MD with training in physical medicine and rehabilitation, otherwise known as a physiatrist. And I have been studying walking and running for way too long, probably over 20, 25 years, and I've made a few discoveries along the way. One big one was with respect to stretching, one particular stretch we'll talk about that study covered. And it also led me to reinvent footwear, which is now what I'm doing. And I left academics to start a radical shoe company called Osh Shoes, O-E-S-H, Shoes. But today I wanted to talk about that hip extension study.
Okay. Yeah, so on a weekly basis, I kind of mull through the research and see what's new when it relates to exercise and injuries. And I came across that article when it comes to, you know, a hip flexor stretch for the elderly. I know the common thinking out there is, you know, the elderly should be taking it easy. They shouldn't be doing very much. But kind of what your article showed was that doing some specific stretching would end up helping the elderly and kind of preventing injury. So maybe you can talk a little bit about, you know, where did this research come from and a little bit of background of the research and a little bit of what you found. I know that's a lot, but we'll start there.
Yes. Okay, so it all comes from studying walking. So everything began, studying walking with sophisticated motion cameras around a room and force plates. And what we did is look at the gait, the walking of elderly subjects compared to young adult subjects. And we were looking for sort of like the holy grail, you know, what in walking as we age occurs that is different about the young adults that we can potentially, what we can do to improve walking performance. And if you look at all of the hundreds of parameters that we studied, there was really only one parameter that was consistent across all of these studies. And the one parameter was the amount of hip extension that you achieve when you walk. So as you walk, your trailing leg hyperextends at the hip about 20 degrees or so. And in the elderly population, very healthy elderly population, over the age of 65, we saw that this decreased by about 5 degrees, so it was only about 15 degrees. And then it was further compromised another 5 degrees if we looked at frail elderly subjects. And so you can kind of, you think, oh, wow, that doesn't sound like a big deal. But what was remarkable is that this is really the only consistent finding that we saw of all these different walking parameters in elderly compared to young adult subjects. And what we did is we asked elderly subjects to walk fast. So if they walk faster, they could achieve the ankle plantar flexion range, the knee extension, all the other ranges were achieved, and the joint torques and all that. They could get up to where a young adult was, but they could not hyperextend their hip any further. So we said, okay, that means that they're tight. They lack 5 degrees of hip extension compared to young adults. And what we ought to do is see if we can't try to stretch that and see if we can't achieve a gait pattern that's more comparable to young adults. And, you know, you think about why does hip extension reduce? And I should also mention that we also found that if you have reduced hip extension, you tend to have a shortened stride or step length, because you just can't, if that hip doesn't hyperextend the trailing limb, you then can't take as long a step as you otherwise would. But the other thing it does is it increases your lumbar lordosis, because if you cannot hyperextend at the true hip joint, that trailing limb, if you cannot hyperextend that trailing hip, then your back makes up for that motion. And so you end up increasing your anterior, your pelvis tilts forward, and so essentially, you know, increasing the lumbar lordosis. So associated with this in the elderly population, we saw this increase in lordosis. So that's not good.
So in order for them to maintain the same stride length, if for the elderly and the frail, they needed to compromise by increasing their lumbar lordosis.
Correct. Yep. Okay. Yep. And okay. Even at normal speeds, though, even at normal speeds, we saw this this slightly increased lordosis. But then, yes, absolutely, as then they try to increase their walking speed, the hip extension would stay the same, and you'd see this increase in lordosis.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's very subtle, you know, that you would never figure this out in a million years without gait analysis, because, you know, there we really can put markers on the thigh and on the pelvis. You know, if you just watch somebody walking, you could swear, you know, they have normal hip extension, but, you know, it's just all that tissue in around the, you know, the low back and in the buttocks area, that you just can't see what's going on. So, and especially, you know, the little 5 degrees difference, unless you actually had these motion cameras, can you really appreciate that this is actually happening.
Wow. And then, so you guys, you know, came up with, you made that observation, then you kind of went through the hypothesis of, okay, let's implement a stretching program for them and see if that improves their gait.
Right. And so this was in the elderly population. And I got to add, you know, that we see this not just in the elderly population, but in other populations as well. We've seen it in people who have low back pain, this reduction in hip extension. And also had seen it in a very specific group. We wrote a case report years ago of this was elderly patients who had lumbar spinal stenosis. So that, you know, the narrowing of the spinal cord at the very end. And typically people report that flexing the spine is really alleviates the pain. And so the classic position is, you know, leaning over a shopping cart or a walker, that is that sort of opens up the area where the end of the spinal cord is. But what we found was the opposite. Even though they looked bent over, that they actually had more lordosis than an age-matched person. So anyways, it's not just the elderly folks. The other thing is just patients in a rehab hospital, generally deconditioned patients. If you don't walk, you don't exercise, you don't hyperextend that hip. Really, if you think about it, the only activity you do in a normal day, in your activity of daily living, to fully range your hip into that 20 degrees of hyperextension is walking. So even if you were to stand there and do a back bend or something like that, you'd end up stretching your back before you would stretch those long ligaments in front of your hip joint. So walking is really, that's what maintains it. And so if you reduce your walking for whatever reason, pain, you sort of get into this vicious cycle of more tightness, and then increased lordosis or shorter step length, in sort of the, you know, these circle diagrams I used to draw, you know, showing this, like, okay, then that causes this, and then that causes that, and it's all downhill from there.
Oh.
So then we want to stretch it.
Okay, so then looking at this, like the spinal stenosis client, their symptoms might be increasing because they have an adaptation in their pelvis or low back with an increase in lordosis.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at, like, in a rehab hospital, like someone that's injured that has kind of decreased their activity, it's kind of important for them to kind of continue on walking in order to maintain and improve that hip extension, or what they could end up getting is that increase in lordosis.
Right. But it can happen, of course, though, so then you start walking, and then, you know, you end up, if you already have a propensity of, you have some amount of tightness already, that you will, though, end up stretching your back, having the more lordosis, or reducing your step length. You will be stretching it, but that's why we said, you know, we really ought to do an isolated stretch. Do an isolated stretch to the hip flexors that's outside of walking, so that would specifically stretch the hip flexors and then improve walking performance. So that was the rationale. So, okay, all we got to do is just do this very quick stretching exercise and see if that improves the parameters and kind of, you know, all these different populations. But we did a very large randomized controlled trial two sets of elderly group, healthy and then frail elderly.
Oh, wow. And then, so then you got them to go, do a stretching program focusing on, like, I call it a 90-90 hip flexor stretch. And
yep.
You know, it was something easily done by the elderly and the frail elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And then what did you guys end up finding?
So what we did, and this is the thing, we did a number of different studies. So I'll go through, and unfortunately, this is what I can say after, you know, the millions of dollars of funding from the NIH. I can say, darn it, I wish we had done it this way, you know, because I don't think we were as aggressive as we should have been. And we did multiple studies, and the first one, we were very aggressive showing people how to do it, and they weren't really comfortable, you know, getting in the position where you're, in that 90-90 position, and then we want to really, you know, get that trailing limb back. And you know, getting an elderly subject on the ground used to that, and then saying, okay, this is what you need to do. The first round we did it, all we did was told elderly subjects to do the exercise on their own, and then we brought them back in 10 weeks. We had a control group where all they did was stretch their shoulder, and then brought them back for another gait analysis, and we showed some minor improvement in their hip extension and in their lumbar lordosis during walking. So with that, we then got a big NIH grant to look at doing the exercises where we actually had a therapist then going to the subject's home, I think it was twice a week, and just making sure they were doing the exercises. It was more like, okay, are you doing them? Are you doing them? Yep. But they were supposed to be doing them every day, twice a day, so about 3 minutes altogether each, in the morning and then the evening, where they would stretch, hold the stretch for 30 seconds on one side, then go to the other side, hold for another 30 seconds, then come back around and do that basically two sets. And what we showed again in both groups was an improvement in the step lengths. We saw improvement in hip extension and improvement in the anterior pelvic tilt, which would be the lordosis. But what was interesting is that not everybody improved. We showed that people who were tight this is a majority of people were already had decreased hip extension range, but there were some elderly folks who really were tremendously flexible already in their hips. And for them, the exercises didn't make a difference. But for all of the people who did have this reduction in hip extension compared to the young adults, there was an improvement. But I think we could have been even more aggressive than what we were. We were still very tentative, and I talked with the therapist, and he showed me what he was doing, and I said, oh my gosh, we've been spending all this time. He really had him in this 90-90 position, but I think he could be a little more aggressive and do more of what they do in yoga. Is it the asana pose, I believe? It's one of the yoga positions where you really get that trailing limb back quite a bit. And then you also take your arm on that side and reach up over your head, because that just kind of stretches the whole rest of the body. And I think if when you do that and put your arm up over your head, you can feel more of a stretch in your hip. And we did do a study that was published, say, 5-6 years ago that looked at, it was a preliminary study. We didn't have a control group, but we looked at yoga, the yoga teacher, she ran through a bunch of yoga maneuvers, but she made sure to include that stretch. And I think we saw more improvement with that than we did with just this simple 90-90 stretch. So I think just being a little bit more aggressive and not being afraid to have elderly subjects do the stretches would be better.
And
what's also interesting, this is what's funny, I remember in the preliminary study with the yoga group, because you say, well, is it all the rest of the yoga that helps? But here's one is, from a biomechanical standpoint, you go, I know why yoga works. It's because of that hip flexor stretch. That's such a critical stretch. And the yoga, we did this preliminary study showed this great improvement. And then I had a fellow doctor working with me, and she wanted to look at the same exercise but do it in patients with Parkinson's disease. And so she got the cohort and then came to me, and she said, gosh, Dr. Kerrigan, I don't know why I don't see any change. All these other studies, we see an improvement in hip extension, improvement in stride length. Why is there no change? And I said, I don't know. Let's talk to the yoga instructor. So we talked to the yoga instructor, and the yoga instructor said, I didn't with that group. I did not do that stretch. I did everything else in yoga, but I was afraid that was too much for them, and they were really frail, and I didn't want them to be getting on the ground. So we just didn't do that stretch. And so I was like, oh, my gosh, that's great. So we said, okay, well, can you do the same thing now, but do that stretch? And now we'll have a control. And, in fact, she did and showed that with the group where she did everything else the same but included that stretch, that there was an improvement. And we said, yay, wow, that's great.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And we said this, then we don't need to do all those yoga stretches. We just need to do the one.
Yep, exactly.
I don't think the yoga instructors would like that, but it's interesting.
Like
it's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? Right. Gosh. So yeah, I was gonna write a little post, a two minute yoga, because really, I believe you don't even need to hold the stretch for 30 seconds is a long time. Usually we said 60 seconds. Holding any stretch for even 30 seconds seems like forever. And I don't think you need to hold a stretch that long. I think 20 seconds would be okay. I don't even bother counting. When I do it, I just go until I feel like I've done enough. I feel it in my, I feel something stretching. And I don't know, maybe 15 seconds, 20, that's fine. and then switch to the other side. So if you do that two times, then it really is about, under 2 minutes. But the key is that you do it when you're warmed up. Don't do it cold. It's like any stretch. I don't even believe in stretching before exercise. I don't think it's been shown to be effective anyways. But I just to make sure that you don't pull anything, to do it after you've done some sort of physical activity, or just getting out of a warm shower, it's just so your body temperature is fairly warm. And so that's the only thing. But as long as you've done some sort of activity, that's okay. I wouldn't do it first thing in the morning when you're just everything's kind of cold.
Okay. I mean, all of that stuff's interesting, and it's really cool to kind of get the insight on things because
you wouldn't get that from the papers.
No, you don't get that from a paper. I mean, because, right, you do you have your theory, you do your research,
right.
Then you got to submit it to the editorial board, and then they read it down even more, and then you get something, then you get the paper. It's kind of neat to kind of get the insight on a couple other things that came out of things. So, I mean, this has been great. Thank you very much for sharing. And I know I had done another post based on, some of your research when it came to footwear and its effect on torque with the knee. And we talked about that before the call, that we would do another interview in a couple weeks on that, because it's a really big topic. So we'll leave that for another time. But maybe you can give people a little bit more information on where to get you. You've started this new footwear company based upon your research when it comes to decreasing torque in the lower body, and you've also started a blog. So maybe you can share people, your company that you've started and your blog that you've started.
Yep, and just with just information, exactly, stuff that you do all this research, but sort of, the practicality of it and sort of the inside, behind the scenes part of the research, like that yoga study, and that doesn't necessarily get published, but, you come away with an understanding of, okay, this is what you need to do. So, that's the kind of information I want to share with everybody and get people moving, exercising, and being healthy. So. Injury-free.
Yeah,
free, so.
definitely. Okay, then so let us know, what's the website where your foot company is and your blog?
Yes, it is Oesch, O-E-S as in Sam, H. If you just Google O-E-S-H, it's actually the word shoe upside down and inside out, but if you Google us, it will come right up. The website itself is Oesch. shoes.com, so it's O-E-S-H and then S-H-O-E-S.com, but you don't have to remember that. If you just Google O-E-S-H and remember it's shoes, you'll see it will pop right up.
Awesome.
And the blog is right on there too.
Right on there too, good. And you'll be doing some more posts, and you've had some very popular posts when it comes to barefoot running.
Yep.
Okay, so I want to thank you very much for coming on to the interview and sharing some great insights, almost like back in behind the scenes of the research, which is kind of cool. So this is Rick Cassells from ExercisesForInjuries.com. Thank you very much for listening to this interview. Hopefully, I know I got a bunch of great information out of the interview, and I hope you did when it comes to yourself and your clients. So we will see you on the blog, ExercisesForInjuries.com, or we'll see you on one of the interviews or videos. So we'll talk to you soon. This is Rick Cassell saying take care and bye-bye.
Okay.